Yeah, actually what I want to do with you is take a little walk down memory lane. Let me just ask a quick question because I know this comes around here. All right, got it. You know what? I got, wireless. I'm good. Good. All right. I actually can do it sooner, I think. I want to walk down memory lane with you, but let me just ask a quick question. Some of you were going to bring some stencils, and there was going to be a Taylor slate, and I know that Abe has a 9-line slate. And I wondered if, do we have the stencils?
I have a
okay, and I have a ton of, I have several different kinds of slates. So we'll talk about those things. The interesting thing is that before the advent of note takers, many of us actually got through school using a thing called a slate and stylus. Yeah. And what was interesting to me is over the years, I have found all kinds of slates and styli. And I've actually brought several of the slates with me. And I think that depending upon the time we get done here, our best bet might be actually go outside and show it to people as they leave the room. So I'd like to have seats at the table. Laura, you didn't bring the Taylor slate, did you?
No, I didn't. Irma.
That's all right. But I'll tell you a few interesting things. When math was done many years ago, if you remember, Dr. Nemeth was talking to us about making sure that we lined up the problems. And so they did it with a pegboard, basically. It was a plastic pegboard. And inside these pegs, they were octagonal. And you would put them in at different angles for different numbers. Or you could turn them over because both sides had meanings.
Yeah.
Had meanings. Right. Right, you had points on one side, and they were flat on the other, and they were called type, and it's very hard to get that anymore. And so, but also, Taylor slates haven't been used in maybe 50 years. Well, I'm going to go, no, I would say more like 45 years or something like that. Wow, okay, well, where I was in Miami, and they had stopped using them by then, in favor of a thing called a cuborhythm, okay? And the cuborhythms were these cubes, and they had Braille. They were actually much harder to use because they had Braille on all the sides of the cube, and you needed to find the right letter, and if it was a D or an F or a J or an H, of course, you had to, you know, turn it around, and so yeah. So it was. I've always felt that was a harder thing to use. Of course, many of us used. What is going on? Oh, I don't want to say anything, but it felt like an earthquake. Oh, okay, everything does now. Yeah, we were in the Hawaii earthquake, and as far as I'm concerned, now everything feels like an earthquake. The floor shakes at all, and I figure we're in for it for another 20 seconds, you know. No, but in any event, so the cuborhythms were much, much harder to use, and unfortunately, I've been asking around, haven't been able to find one to show you, but so that was the mathematics, and of course, we did use the Braillers. But a lot of teachers resisted that. There were never enough Braillers when I was in school in Florida. There were never enough Braillers to go around, so it would be very difficult to teach all the kids on Braillers. And it was very, very difficult to teach math on slates and styli. So what generally happened is kids were excused from math class. And that meant that, you know, there grew a whole generation of math dummies, to which I belong. I really think that it was a shame when they did away with the Taylor slate, since they had nothing really to replace it with. The other thing I wanted to mention was the way we listen to books. Listening to books used to be an adjunct. You would get talking books basically for pleasure, and then you would use your Braille books that you got in school for your studies, and also, of course, we could go to the library and get Braille books. But if you were a voracious reader, I was not. I wish I could say that I had been, but since I had decided early on that I wasn't going to learn Braille because I was going to be able to see soon, that's what the doctors told me, it took many years for me to buckle down and actually learn Braille, so it never became a thing of pleasure for me, although I don't know what I'd do without it. I use it every day of my life and all the time, but if you didn't use Braille or if you used talking books, we had these luggable talking book machines made of wood. Remember them? Huge things. At least, I'd be surprised if they were that light. Yeah, they were so big, and they played 33 LPs and 8s and 16s. Yeah. And if you remember, Recording for the Blind, when they first came out, they were really using reel-to-reel tapes. You remember? Anybody remember an open reel tape? Yes. Yeah. I think Ray has an open reel tape with him. Do you have it here, Ray?
I forgot to
bring it. Okay. All right. But the open reel tapes were like, picture a cassette. And inside the cassette, there would be two little pancakes full of tape. Well, these were giant pancakes. They were 7.5 inches across in diameter, and they held about, most of them held 1,200 feet worth of tape, which was approximately an hour. Approximately. I'm not being exact, because truth to tell, the exact numbers were things that you wouldn't really remember, like, you know, 1,100 and change, I've forgotten even myself. 45 minutes is 854 inches, feet. And so these would be wrapped around, and you would have to thread them through an empty reel on the other side. Take my word for it, it was a pain in the neck. You would think that you had the sucker already threaded and everything was just fine, and you turn it around and it slipped out and you had to go thread it again. Or it would tear. And if it pulled too tight, it would tear, and then you had to splice it. Oh, my goodness. So I know that's what it's about. So and then I remember the one of the greatest things that happened was portable open reel tape recorders came about, and they were really great. They were just a few pounds, you know, maybe I would say 5 pounds or something like that, and then you had the tapes. But the tapes that they took were only like 20 minutes long. They were 3-inch tapes or 5-inch tapes. They were really short tapes. You know what? I'll take it in a few minutes, okay? When I get ready to move to the next topic, before I move to the next topic, I'll take it, okay? Mm-hmm. So if you remember, at that point, you know, the five inch, you're passing the slate around? Yeah, no, don't pass them around right now, because it'll get too confusing. All right, I have 5 minutes. So I thought I was going to get done quick. All right, so I never get done quick. But anyway, not with anything. So these open reels, I remember that when Recordings for the Blind came out with open reel tapes, they were the 5-inch tapes, but they had managed to put like a ton of tape on them. Well, that was okay, except that the tape was so blessed thin that it was even more difficult to work with. So it really became a pain in the neck. And I remember when cassettes came out, and I got my first cassette recorder in 1969, and I thought, oh my gosh, this is a cat's meow. Here we are getting ready to do away with them, right? But the thing is, I went to work for the Jewish Braille Institute, when it was called that, back in 1990. And all of a sudden, what did I find myself working with extensively? Open reel tapes. I swore I'd never touch another one of those things. But there I was, working with open reel tapes again. JBI used excellent tapes, so we didn't have nearly the problems that we used to have with them. And also, the tape recorders had been built up. And actually, the sound on those things was excellent. And then if you remember, RFB&D started the SoundScriber thing with and then LC followed real close thereafter. And they were these little thin records. You could get them sometimes in Mad Magazine too. They would have them, but they were so thin and so little, and they scratched incredibly easily. So then, like I say, when we were all so happy about the cassettes, you got a quick story for me about an open reel, but promise me that it's quick. Go for it. Who's talking?
This is Luis.
Luis, go for
Kate's
it.
Kate's dad.
Yep.
I was a freshman up here, and I got a reel-to-reel machine. And I don't know what possessed me to do this, but I also got a cat. And what I discovered was that I had to become very good at splicing tape because my cat would always bat at them and break them.
Oh, that is so funny. Yeah, they just seem to break at a whim. I mean, a cat's claw is sharp. But, I mean, I don't know what I did to cause it. I just always caused it. And, you know, I didn't even have cat's claws. So we moved on and began listening to cassettes. And now, of course, a lot of us are using CDs. And, you know, the Daisy formatted books are available from Canada in CDs, and certainly from RFB&D, and those are incredible. I don't know. Do you all know what the Daisy standard is? Say aye if you do. Those who do not, say aye. Okay, I'll just tell you real in a nutshell that the Daisy standard, when you get these books from RFB&D on cassette, CD, makes it possible for you to skip forward or backwards by pages, by paragraphs, pages, lines, sentences, sections, subheadings, so that you can also bookmark the thing. So if you're reading, you know how sighted guys can highlight and then go back and study just the highlighted lines? Well, now we can do that with these Daisy books. So it's going to be, I'm sorry? And it's instantaneous. It is absolutely instantaneous. So this Daisy format is going to be a wonderful thing, and it is already for those people who are using it. It's just great. You can go through books so much quicker. And when you set it up to go fast forward, or you want it to read faster, it doesn't change the pitch. So it's just an excellent thing. So we have really gone the full gamut, as we have with Braille. Those of us who are using Braille now, many of us carry a slate around. I keep one in my purse for good measure because I can't imagine being without one. But most of the time I use my note taker, and the Braille displays have come full circle so that they're no longer $5,000 for, well, yes, they are. Anyway, they're very expensive, but hopefully, it's to be hoped that they'll come down, and certainly they'll become a used market for them. But I have with me today different kinds of slates. I have the old board slate, which many of you will remember, and those were made of nickel, but a lot of people had never seen, I don't think, that they had regular slates that were not board slates, but they were just standard 40 character, 30 something character slates that were made of nickel also. The ones we usually see are lighter metal, but these were made of nickel. They were very hard to bust and bend. They also had single line slates made with this nickel stuff. So I have those. Also, you'll remember the slates which the back came out, you know, the back opened up and you could see what you were writing. Now, I have one of those. A trap door, yes. So I have one of those with me. I have the cassette slate that is not plastic. And I have... Julie has her steno mask. Okay. And David has a... David has a writing guide if you were going to use print. So those of you who have something to demonstrate, if you'll meet me when we adjourn, if you'll meet me outside, what we'd like to do is sit down at the table out there. And anybody who's interested in coming by and seeing, let me just ask, is there anybody who wants, before we set up, is there anybody who's interested in touching this stuff? Please don't. You do? Okay, because if you don't want to do it, I don't want to set up. Anybody else? Say aye if you're going to be coming by. Thank you for walking down memory lane with me. And I would ask for questions, but I believe that Carl wants the microphone back.
We're old, David. Thanks. Okay.